Good morning, everyone, and please sit comfortably. Today is Thursday, September 19th, and it's the sixth day of our seven-day retreat. So there's a tendency for our mind to get very active as we approach the end of a retreat. We start making all sorts of plans. You know, what ferry will we take? What will we have for dinner tomorrow? What's up for the weekend? And so if you see that arising in your mind, do your best to just let it go and just come right here. This morning, all of that area across the sound is lost in fog. So all the things we're planning is not really even there. So we can just let it go. You know, we know our mind is never satisfied, so we could just say, breathing in, I know my mind is never satisfied, and just come straight back here to the wonder that is unfolding right here, where we're not fogged in, where the sun is shining, and we're all together practicing. So please, just do your best. Bring body and mind together and call upon your own spiritual ardency, you know, that burning longing to understand, to be present, and practice diligently these last 24 hours. Let's establish ourselves firmly in awareness and mindfulness. The fifth realization of great beings is the awareness that ignorance is the cause of the endless round of birth and death. Bodhisattvas always listen to and learn from others, so their understanding and skillful means can develop, and they can teach living beings and bring them great joy. The paradox of our life, and really the life of the world, is that we are alive in this body for just a very short time. We have great strengths and deep flaws, and we frequently struggle to find our way in the midst of suffering. And at the very same time, with absolutely no separation, that we are the hidden jewel in the mountain form, the vast blue sky, the ocean waters, the old-growth forest with roots deep in the earth. It's like our hand. Now, there is a front of the hand and the back of the hand, but it's just one hand. You can't have the front without the back. You can't have the back without the front. It just is. No separation. Just one. You know, but we forget this all the time. And we come on retreat to remind ourselves of this. We practice meditation, calming, easing, stilling our mind. And little by little, concentration develops. It can happen in the blink of an eye. Or it might take years, decades. But one day, when the causes and conditions are right for us, for each one of us, ideas of self and other, birth and death, just fall away naturally. And we understand right down to the very marrow of our bones. Our ignorance of this, our belief that we are separate, that we have a separate, solid, unchanging self, you know, is the root of our suffering, the cause of the endless round of birth and death. And there will be times when we get caught, you know, when we forget our true nature, and that's okay. That's why we practice, to learn, to open, to deepen. We need our life, this life, the fullness of who we are. We are both the endless blue sky, and we are the storm clouds on the horizon. And we can only wake up to the vast blue sky because of the storm clouds on the horizon. Many, many years ago, high in the mountains, there was a small temple where a community of practitioners lived. The abbot's name was Bai Zhang. And the life of this temple, this monastery, revolved around practice, just like we've been doing this week. Sitting at dawn with the sunrise, work meditation in the morning, sutras in the afternoon. Bai Zhang gave a talk once a week, and all the monastics looked forward to that. And one day, while giving his talk, Bai Zhang noticed an old man, someone he had never seen before, standing at the very back of the zendo, listening very intently. At the end of the talk, you know, before anyone had a chance to meet with him, to even say hello, the old man just quickly left. But he came back many times to hear Bai Zhang speak and to practice, even briefly, with a sangha. And one day he stayed after the talk. All the monastics left the zendo and went about their day, went about their practice, but the old man remained standing at the very back of the room. Bai Zhang came up to him and asked, "Who are you? Who are you standing here before me?" The old man replied, "I am not a human being. In the far distant past, in the time of Kasyapa Buddha, many kalpas ago, I was the abbot at this monastery and I was the teacher. At that time, one of my students asked me whether an enlightened person is subject to the law of cause and effect. And I answered him, the enlightened person is not subject to the law of cause and effect. For this answer, I became a fox. For 500 rebirths, I have been a fox, and I am still a fox. Please, Abbot, save me from this condition with your Zen words. Please offer a turning word to release me from the body of a fox." The fox, the old man, the Zen master. I mean, who was he, really? He then turned to Bai Zhang, looked him imploringly, bowed his head and asked his burning question, "Is the enlightened person subject to the law of cause and effect or not?" Bai Zhang answered, "Such a person does not evade the law of cause and effect." Upon hearing Bai Zhang's words, the old man woke up. He instantly became totally awake, totally enlightened. Bowing deeply, he said, "I am released. I am no more a fox. But I have to leave my body in the dwelling place on the other side of the mountain. Abbot, please, I have a request. Please retrieve my body and perform a funeral as you would for a monk, as you would for one of your own." That afternoon, after lunch, Bai Zhong rang the big temple bell, calling all the monks to gather. And they were all wondering what was up. This was like really out of the ordinary. And when the community was assembled, Bai Zhong announced that tomorrow there would be a funeral for a monastic, a Sangha member who had died. And everyone in the community was aghast. Says, is there someone here sick that we don't know about? Or is someone, one of us, going to die tonight? Later that day, Bai Zhong and a few close associates left the monastery and went out into the mountain, through the forest and the meadows, until they came upon a cave. There, in the cave, was the body of a fox, and the fox was dead. With great care, they wrapped the fox in a blanket and carried him back to the monastery. They built a simple coffin and placed the fox within. The next morning, Bai Zhong offered the funeral service with flowers and bells, incense and sutras. They paid their deepest respect for the fox. The old man, the former abbot, his ignorance led to suffering. The lifespan of a fox in the wild is only 4 to 6 years. And the life of a fox is not better than a human being's. It's also not worse than a human being's, but it is very different. He needed 500 rebirths, 500 rounds of birth and death, of self and other, until he could awaken into his true nature again. And he needed to be a fox to be able to do that. We may get caught in our suffering, and it may feel like eternity before we can find our way through. And when we can see through all our own entanglements, we are grateful. And we're particularly grateful to our greatest teacher, which is, paradoxically, the suffering itself. All of our life, every experience, however mundane, however traumatic and painful, is an invitation to wake up, to embody compassion, to respond to the conditions of our life and the life of the world exactly as it is right now, in this one moment. For the fox, the turning word that allowed him to touch reality was Bai Zhong's response. No one evades the law of cause and effect. What turning word do we need? Could it be the song of the bird? The waves on the beach? The chop, chop, chop of the knife on the cutting board as we prepare our dinner at home after this retreat? The sixth realization of great beings is the awareness that poverty creates anger and hatred, which creates a vicious cycle of negative thoughts and actions. I think we are realizing this in real time in ourselves and in our lives in very concrete ways. We are subjected to a lot of negativity, to anger, to hatred, both outside ourselves and perhaps also within ourselves. And this leads to aggression and violence. Many of us have fears about the future, and we ourselves may be feeling anger and hatred. You know, we consciously, intentionally choose to walk the path of non-harming. And we start right where we are, right here. You know, in fact, we have been practicing this all week. We have been walking together the path of non-harming all week. Breathing in, I know that I am breathing in. Breathing out, I know that I am breathing out. The full awareness of the breath, the full awareness of the body and all the activities of the body, sitting or walking, standing or lying down, chopping vegetables, sweeping the floor, washing dishes, cleaning the bathroom. Mind and body is one. Full awareness of the mental formations as they arise and pass away. When we are angry, we know when we are angry. And we take good care of the energy of anger in ourselves. We practice in such a way that we don't have to project our anger out into the world. The same with hatred, with fear, with sadness, with whatever arises and passes away within ourselves. And we're honest with ourselves. You know, when we're counting our breath to help us find stability and grounding, and we have to go back to 1,700 times, we do it. And we're happy that we can see that we are lost in our entanglement. And for one moment, we are clear. You know, we are honest with ourselves when we see what arises in our mind, and we do our best not to get caught or carried away, but also to not reject or push away what we don't like about ourselves. The thoughts and emotions rising and passing away. You know, we walk the middle path, and sometimes we fall this way, and sometimes we fall that way. But always, to the best of our ability, we come back to just this breath, just this moment. A friend of mine told me this story about when she was a new practitioner, and she was on her very first seven-day retreat. And it was a beautiful and very intense experience for her, full of surprises. Because she had never had this opportunity to practice this way before. And the retreat was really small, not that different than us right now. And there was a lot of intimacy created by the Sangha, just coming together, coming back, breathing together, walking together, eating together, hearing each other snore at night, hearing each other's stomach grumble in the morning, waiting for the breakfast bell. Just like a lot of intimacy, even though they really rarely spoke. And she said that she was often surprised by the strong emotions that arose in her. And she wasn't even always able to identify exactly what she was feeling. You know, for most of her life, she had been pretty shut down. And here she was on retreat, and like all this stuff was coming up, and she was just doing her best to come back. She said that early on the very last morning, she went for a walk on the beach, and she recognized that she was feeling sad, that she didn't want to leave. And she realized that she had felt very safe on the retreat. And so she was practicing walking meditation on the beach, breathing in a step, breathing out a step, breathing in, breathing out. And she became aware of a strong sense of self-loathing filling her mind. And this thought had just been right behind her consciousness, right below, like she had felt that tension and pushing something away all week. And just in that moment, like she was concentrated enough that this feeling was able to enter into her awareness. And she didn't want to get lost in it, and she didn't want to push it away, and she just wanted to be with it. And so she closed her eyes, and she just came back to her breath. And she just came back like three times, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. Breathing in, breathing out, and she opened her eyes, and at that exact moment, an eagle flew over her. And it was so close that she could almost touch it. That eagle cut right through her thoughts. It was a turning word for her. Life spoke to her loud and clear through that eagle. You may believe this about yourself, but it's just a thought. It's not the truth. It's not all there is. Wake up. Come back. Come back right now, this moment. Life unfolding. Only right now. You know, it's an act of generosity to be able to accept ourselves exactly as we are in this moment, without judging or reacting, without pushing away or getting lost. If we are able to do this for ourselves, we are much more likely to be able to accept others exactly as they are, without judging or reacting, without getting lost in their story about them or pushing them away. And this helps create the causes and conditions that lead to more respect, to listening, to the possibility for dialogue and for finding understanding. When practicing generosity, Bodhisattvas consider everyone, friends and enemies alike, to be equal. They don't condemn anyone's wrongdoings or even hate those presently causing harm. There is a story, Jack Kornfield, who is a Vipassana teacher, tells in his book about forgiveness. And unfortunately, I no longer have a copy of that book. But it was a stage in my life, I read that book a lot. And it was really very helpful for me. And there are lots of little stories, and some of them are very moving. And so unfortunately, I don't remember all the details of this story. But I want to give credit where credit is due and tell it to the best of my ability. And this is apparently a true story. I just don't remember the person's name. So there was a famous sports figure. And we'll just call him Bob because I can't remember his name. And I don't remember what sport he played, but he was very successful in his sports, and he was highly regarded, not only for his skill in the sport that he played, but for his good character. He was genuinely a nice guy. And he didn't let fame go to his head. And he was known for his great generosity of spirit, but also of material resources as well. And so one day he was leaving the sports stadium with some of his teammates, and a man approached him. And he told Bob about a family he knew who were going through some really hard times. Their child, a little girl, had a very aggressive form of leukemia. And she was not responding well to the treatments that her doctors had recommended. And there were some new, some experimental, some cutting-edge therapies that her doctors thought would be helpful. But the parents just didn't have the means. Both parents worked, but the mom had really had to cut back her hours to just be with her daughter, and the dad's insurance, of course, would not cover these treatments. And so the man asked Bob, you know, could you help this family? Could you make a donation? And Bob immediately, without hesitation, pulled out his checkbook and wrote a check for a really large sum of money, like $100,000+. And his friends were kind of shocked and tried to talk him out of it. Said, you know, think about it. Think about it just for a few days. And Bob said, no, I just really want to offer this. I have the means and I want to do this. And so the person accepted the check and said, thank you very much. And several weeks went by. And Bob went about his life and didn't think about this at all. And one day, one of his friends who had been with him that day pulled him aside and said, hey, Bob, I think you've been conned. I never really trusted that guy, and I did some digging around, and it turns out that everything he told you was a lie. I hate to say it, but he used you. And Bob just stopped in his tracks, and he asked his friend, so what are you saying? You mean there isn't a little girl with leukemia? His friend said, no. And her family isn't struggling and not able to make ends meet? He said, no, Bob, it's all a lie. And Bob just shook his head, and then he began to smile. And he laughed out loud. And he said, oh my God, that a little girl is not dying a slow, painful death from cancer. That's the best news I have heard in a really long while. So we can all rejoice in Bob's generosity and open-heartedness, the lightness of his being. You know, and at the same time, we are experiencing difficult circumstances in a world that may turn our lives upside down. Or it may not. We just don't know. You know, how do we not hate even those presently causing harm? I mean, there is no easy answer. But we can keep the question alive. You know, we can take refuge and inspiration in the teachings and the Dharma. We can take refuge and inspiration in the Sangha, in each other. We can take refuge and inspiration in our aspiration to practice. And we do know that hatred never ceases by hatred, but by love alone is healed. All the positive qualities of our practice are born through generosity. Generosity is offering a kind word to a friend, a smile to a stranger. Generosity is giving yourself the time and space to practice, to come on retreat. In Vietnam, during the war, when Thich Nhat Hanh was a young monk, he gathered around him a group of young people, and they would go into all the villages and the hamlets after a bombing raid, and they would just walk into those villages and respond to whatever was there, however they could, to the immense unimaginable suffering. And in the midst of that, with bombs falling around their heads, they would take one day a week to come together, to gather, and do a day of practice. Just like we have done a day of practice every day this week. In order to touch that wellspring of an open heart, that ardency to be present, to find the way to stay open-hearted, their minds free, even in the midst of unbearable, unimaginable suffering. Generosity is sharing the merits of this practice with all beings. You know, together with all beings, we practice for all beings. Generosity is offering the fullness, the wholeness of ourselves in each moment, in our commitment to be present with suffering, with life just as it is. And the only way we can do that is just by coming back to this breath and this breath and just this breath.